Hello, this is Ariski Dahoud of Mir Risk LLC, and I am also the editor of the North Africa Journal. Today is the 8th of October, and in this episode, we're going to remain in North Africa, specifically in revisiting Algeria after our recent brief review of Egypt. Why Algeria? Well, because the country is bracing for yet another election on the 1st of November, with the government of President Tebboune pushing for a new constitution. This podcast will highlight how much trouble Algeria is in and how the long-term outlook feels very compromised. Let me begin by saying that the political stakeholders among the opposition in general, media commentators and civil society, are generally qualifying the draft constitutional revision as poorly prepared. The new constitution pushed by newly appointed President Tebboune will be submitted to a referendum on the 1st of November, with less than a month from the poll and a few weeks after its expeditious adoption in Parliament. There is really no positive consensus, but everything that we hear from civil society, commentators and the opposition appears negative. Its content and the approach adopted in its drafting continue to elicit negative reactions from most opposition and figures in civil groups, including lawyers. The positions within civil society and the so-called opposition are divided into broadly two groups. The secular movement, which sees the proposed constitution as an effort from the regime to consolidate its powers and a way to legitimize a president who was appointed or imposed and not voted in. On the other hand, there is the Islamic conservative and nationalist movement, which primary opposition to the new constitution stems from its rejection of the protection given to the Tamazight language, a language that is native to North Africa and spoken by ethnic Kabyles and Tuaregs and Shawias and Mzabs and others in the region. Among those vehemently opposed to the Tamazight language is the Association of Algerian Ulemas, which brings together Islamic clerics and religious conservatives. Statements from the Ulemas say certain articles, and I'm quoting here, certain articles of the proposed constitution are time bombs threatening national identity and the place of Islam. And here they're referring to the articles that legitimize the Tamazight language. The Ulemas joined the Islamic-leaning political parties that are also rejecting the new constitution, which will be submitted to a popular referendum within 3 weeks. The Ulemas also evoked the ambiguity of the articles relating to freedom of worship and to the neutrality of educational institutions in relation to ideological influences. With that, the association sees the school systems eventually becoming a threat to the future of the country. Even if, in these press releases, the ulemas do not give voting instructions, their positions is consistent with that of several Islamist parties, as I mentioned, which have expressed the same reservations on issues of identity in the constitution. Most Islamist parties in Algeria have asked their militants to vote no to the new constitution. This is the case in particular of Abdelrazak Makri's Movement for Society for Peace, MSP, which considers the constitution as biased and in favor of the secular movement. The Justice and Development Party, PJD, of Abdullah Jabala, sees in the place given to the Tamazight language as a danger for the Arabic language in Islam, a position confirmed by another Islamist party, the Ennahda party of Yazid Ben Aisha. Now, some secular politician went even as far as to accuse certain Gulf monarchies, in particular the United Arab Emirates, of sponsoring attacks against the Tamazight language in Algeria, in an effort to maintain their influence on the North African country. The conservative movement has also had strong allies in the regime proper, in particular last year when the late General Gaid Salah, who was the de facto strongman of the regime, ordered the arrest of anyone carrying the Berber flag. Several regions with strong Berber identities, such as the Kabylie region and Mzabe of Gardaïa, have long been under siege by the Algerian security services, adding a layer of racism in Algerian politics. Conservative judges have also been activated to defend the Islamo-Arabic identity in Algeria. Just today, the 8th of October, a court in the city of Khenchela sentenced an anti-regime activist to 10 years in prison. But the charge in this case is inciting atheism. He was found guilty of offending Islam. The judge went even over the 8-year sentence proposed by the prosecutor. That shows how conservatives, nationalists, religious movements around the world have been taking over governments and risks creating more trouble in the long run. In the secular movement, the opposition to the proposed constitution is also intense. The RCD, the Workers' Party, the FFS, the USP, MDS, the PST, and hundreds of civil society organizations have collectively rejected the draft, not having been part to any debate, and qualifying it as biased to the regime. Now, these groups say the proposed law paves the way for the reconstitution of the old system, that is, the system that came from the now defunct Bouteflika regime, that has been rejected by the Hirak popular movement, which started on the 22nd of February of 2019. Instead, these political groups are advocating for the establishment of a constituent process, which would put the country on the path to true democracy. The drafting of the constitution, which is likely to be Algeria's future constitution, giving the ability of the government to manipulate polls, was done in complete lack of transparency. After the committee in charge of drafting it advocated a consensual approach and promised a wide debate with the participation of no less than 1,700 experts, a document published on the presidency's Facebook page showed the committee worked by collecting proposals made by anonymous sources, essentially people who have chosen pseudonyms and usernames that are impossible to identify or track. The content of their proposals was, for the most part, attacks against the Tamazight language, with anonymous people urging its removal from constitutional protection. The promised general debate also never took place. Voices opposing the move were outright banned from accessing television and radio stations. Journalists from state-owned channels have been sent, as some of them confirmed to us, a list of personalities and political figures that are allowed to be interviewed on constitutional matters. All opposition party officials, most academics and jurists, were not allowed to comment. So while the Algerian government is focusing on survival and establishing some sort of legitimacy, where is Algeria headed in practical terms? To start with, nearly 1 year after the appointment of President Tebboune, Algeria has no economic policy to speak of. The government has been sending contradictory signals to economic operators who collectively say they lack visibility on what's coming ahead. Economic orientations and policies in Algeria are the responsibility of the president, and they're now causing great concerns in business circles. The first observation visible to all is the lack of action on the ground, creating an environment of abandonment and laissez-faire across all industries and economic sectors. Since taking office late 2019, the government led by Prime Minister Abdelaziz Jarad and appointed by the president, has been insisting on the need for, and I'm quoting here, comprehensive and deep reforms, and that's specific to the economy. These proclamations have failed to materialize on the ground. In the weekly councils of ministers, President Tebboune regularly instructs, and with increasing impatience, the ministers to take action by announcing concrete measures, but which are never rolled out or simply slow to see the light of day. Pressured by the president, the government has been trying to make some announcements. They were limited during the summer to the highly publicized creation of a few Islamic finance services now offered in also few branch offices of the state-owned bank BNA. That included also the announcement of the upcoming creation of a few dozen youth cooperatives who will be once again encouraged to go prospect for gold in the Hoggar in the extreme south of the region. For his part, the Minister of Industry, Farhat Aitali, focused his attention exclusively on deconstructing the highly corrupt automobile assembly sector, continuing over the summer to refine his specification intended to regulate the import of vehicles. This is while factory closings and layoffs skyrocketed virtually in all sectors of the economy. Meanwhile, cash shortages and long queues outside post offices were the main economic event of the past season. Ultimately, water cuts during Eid al-Adha led to the dismissal of the entire staff of the Sial Water Company. Disruptions in internet access are now a permanent fixture, so much so that it was the Prime Minister himself who raised the hypothesis of organized sabotage in August. Abdelaziz Jarrad estimated that the phenomena related to the lack of liquidity at the post offices, forest fires, and disturbances in the drinking water supply, as well as the power cuts recorded in several regions of the country, were, and I'm quoting here, premeditated acts aimed at creating instability in the country. The president and his prime minister announced the opening of investigations into these incidents, but as the year comes to an end, their investigations have yielded no results. The COVID-19 pandemic has also confirmed the inability of the Tabunjarad duo to manage the economy. For almost 7 months now, the coronavirus has hit the Algerian economy very hard, largely due to the drastic measures enacted to contain the virus. As of now, the country's borders are still closed. Air, sea, and intra-province transports are at a standstill. It is only this week that the government finally announced that back-to-school season will start at the end of October and for universities at the end of November. The strict containment measures adopted to stem the coronavirus pandemic have paralyzed large swaths of the Algerian economy. Construction, public works, transport, commerce, lodging, restaurants, services were among the most affected sectors. Although economists speak of preliminary data at the end of June 2020 showing a net decline in economic growth of 6.6% year over year, the real data should show double-digit contraction instead. Why double-digit? Well, consider this. Sonatrach, the state-owned oil and gas company that is responsible for almost all of Algeria's export earnings, has been facing an extraordinary environment. Its internal problems and the challenges facing the company and confronting the sector's leadership have resulted in the company losing $5 billion since the start of the year. The losses can be explained by the fall in the country's production as a result of operational blunders, the freezing of activity in several drilling rigs, the freezing of production activity of a dozen oil fields in the south since May 2020, are among the various issues that have greatly disrupted daily production. Last June, Algeria struggled to produce just 700,000 barrels of oil per day in what became the most brutal fall in Algeria's entire oil history. In July and August, production managed a meager increase to 745,000 barrels per day. And during the month of September, nothing was announced or implemented by Sonatrach to rectify the fall in oil production to bring it back to at least 800,000 per day. The company's strategy has been to reduce operational costs to save money, as directed by President Tebboune, as a way to confront the financial crisis resulting from the pandemic. But the country's oil industry is confronting its biggest crisis, resulting in the collapse of export and the decline in income. Specific to its losses, Sonatrach saw at least $3 billion vanish from the reduction in export revenues. To these losses, add $2 billion that must be added in lost income from Algeria's binding agreement to the OPEC production cuts decided in April. But it's not just the oil and gas sector, but wherever you look, things look pretty grim. The virtual disappearance of government action and the vanishing of economic policy are having a catastrophic impact on all of Algeria's economic sectors. Even when looking at the unreliable figures released by the government that are not vetted by independent agencies, it's clear that the authorities cannot figure out a way to hide the extent of the damage. Produced by the National Statistics Office, a government agency, the data on the second quarter of 2020 shows activity declines reaching more than 50% in several key industrial sectors. The Algerian government would have been forgiven if the cause of the economic collapse was only attributed to COVID-19. The virus, however, is only part of a bigger picture that includes a government that cannot control its own affairs and entrenched corruption. What is even stunning is that the decline this year came on top of last year's economic crash due to the political protests all along 2019 that essentially crippled the government and froze all economic activity. So the situation is horrific on top of a very bad year. Take, for example, a sector that was at the center of the country's industrial policies of the 1970s and the 1980s, the heavy industry. ONS says the steel, metal, mechanical, electrical, electronic industries collectively managed to fall by 55% in value terms year over year during the second quarter of 2020. This means that while 2019 was a terrible year given the Hirak protest movement and the destabilization of government due to the dramatic end of the Bouteflika regime, this year the collapse is even steeper, essentially wiping out decades of industrial momentum. The lighter industries, such as textile, also fell by 27% in terms of value. Wood and paper industry lost 37% of their value. Footwear production was down 55%. No single sector has been spared by the crisis. The Tebboune administration looked at what industrial countries have been doing to mitigate the impact of the pandemic and its inevitable general slowdown and made several economic and financial decisions that were proven to be symbolic instead. The first was to help stakeholders in civil service and in state-owned industrial sector, in which more than 50% of the workforce was required to stay at home while continuing to receive salaries. Steps were taken later to support private businesses and preserve jobs. In addition to the postponement of tax payments and the elimination of penalties for delays in carrying out public contracts, companies have benefited from a postponement until the fourth quarter of this year of the repayment of bank loans. But industry insiders consider the measures decided by the government in favor of private companies as extremely insufficient. Beyond managing the impact of the pandemic, which sums up the first year of President Tebboune's five-year term, economists are now wondering about the ability of the Algerian government to create policies and orientations that are sustainable on the long run and can create growth. In this context, the signals sent by the government seem largely contradictory and offer no visibility neither on the real intentions of the regime nor on the prospects, mainly financial, of the Algerian economy. In terms of contradictory signals, the intentions of the president made at the beginning of the spring to reduce public spending by 50% led last June to a change in the finance law, which showed an actual reduction of just 1.6% of the 2020 state budget, essentially undermining the president's call for budgetary rigor. Indeed, the country is now facing a record deficit in the state budget, which could well exceed 15% of the GDP at the end of the year. The persistence of the extremely high deficit is largely the cause of the liquidity crisis that the Algerian financial system is currently experiencing. In terms of the business climate, things are not much clearer. That the Boon-Jarrad government has signaled its openness by approving the new hydrocarbons law prepared by the previous administration of Prime Minister Bedwi, which confirmed the abandonment of the so-called 51-49 rule, limiting foreign companies' equity ownership in Algerian projects to no more than 49%, and also the end of the state right to preemption. Two areas that annoyed foreign companies greatly, in particular the ones operating in the oil and gas sector. In the view of government officials themselves, however, these new directives are still not operational due to a lack of final decrees that would confirm their implementation. The Tabun government has also placed great emphasis on the need to fight the economic bureaucracy in order to encourage investment. But just last month, a move contradicting the statements calling for a fight against bureaucracy came to announce the end of that intention. The Council of Ministers insisted on the need to subject any foreign exchange transaction to the prior approval of the Council of Government. The decision is guaranteed to cripple the purchase of equipment critical to the running of the country's industries. The strategy of the Algerian government today is essentially dictated by its midterm survival, with defensive moves meant to extinguish crises on the short term. On the financial front, the strategy consists of saving time by monitoring the level of foreign exchange reserves, which have come under intense pressure. But the solution does not lie in obsessively scrutinizing the level of foreign exchange reserves. It lies in defining and adopting sustainable trajectories for the state budget and the balance of payments, and creating the conditions that create a real economy. Despite the reformist rhetoric displayed since its installation last June, Algeria's new bosses seem powerless to define a clear economic path and project by implementing significant reforms that risk being unpopular and undermining their political objectives. The months and years ahead are likely to be tumultuous for Algeria, and political and social unrest could become also a permanent situation going forward. And with that, thank you for listening, and until our next podcast, goodbye.